Now we move on to the Keystone XL pipeline, which got some attention earlier in the week when the White House on Tuesday threatened to veto fresh legislation approving the controversial Keystone pipeline. And that's, of course, setting up a pretty clear showdown that's going to happen between the new Republican-controlled Congress and President Barack Obama. The Senate Republicans Committee on Thursday advanced a bill to approve construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, what they call their top priority in a new campaign to push back Obama's policies, energy policies, now that they fully control Congress. We have a number of guests to talk about these developments. Joining us on the line is Karthik Ganapathy, who is the U.S. Communications Manager for 350.org. Karthik, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. We're also joined by Scott Parkin, who's the Senior Climate and Energy Campaigner at Rainforest Action Network, one of the lead organizers of the Keystone XL Pledge of Resistance campaign. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Great.
It's good to
be here.
It's good to have you. And finally, we're joined by Peter Galvin, who's the Director of Programs and a founder of the Center for Biological Diversity. Peter, thank you for being with us as well. So maybe we'll start with you, Peter. Your thoughts, your reaction to Obama. I mean, it's not necessarily news because he had pointed this out earlier, but now clearly the confrontation is on. But your thoughts about his commitment and the administration's commitment to veto any legislation coming out of the new Congress?
Well, this was definitely the strongest statement he had made yet on the pipeline, and so it's a really good sign. But it's definitely not over yet. And Republicans have threatened to attach the Keystone bill to any number of bills, including the bill funding the government to stay open. So, you know, this is going to be going on for some time. But it was a really, really important signal from the White House, and obviously a result of a huge amount of outpouring from the American people and a huge amount of great organizing work done by a large number of organizations, including the folks that you have on this call. So, and just, you know, an amazing number of Americans have weighed in on this issue, and it has created an impact that can't be ignored.
Peter, maybe for some listeners who perhaps have heard the term Keystone XL pipeline, but they're not quite clear what exactly it means. What is it? Could you just give us a thumbnail sketch of why the outrage of the construction of this and how this is could impact the United States and the environment, et cetera?
Yeah, it's the Keystone pipeline is a massive energy project that would bring tar sands oil into the United States from Canada to be exported. And it's the tar sands oil is about the dirtiest oil on the planet. It's between 30% more carbon intense or even more than other forms of oil that we burn. And basically the tar sands deposits in Alberta, primarily Alberta, but there are also some in the United States, are so carbon intense that some of the major climatologists, including one of the major climatologists, James Hansen, has said that basically it's game over for the climate if these tar sands are burned in combination with all the other fossil fuels that are being burned right now. So we really have to stop this Keystone pipeline, and it's a keystone of the tar sands development, which is if the Keystone pipeline can't be built, this tar sands development will not take place.
Well, Peter, this is Jed Brandt. How does this change an administration policy or clarification around Keystones? Does that have effect, say, on issues of fracking here in New York, where there's been a lot of ambiguity from the state government?
Well, it's definitely a momentum is building, you know, from the movements that have been fighting the fossil fuel industrial complex in the United States. So the fracking decision in New York that's come down, I think, may have actually potentially influenced Obama a bit. But I think these things have been in the works for some time. And certainly there's some interaction between these movements, absolutely. And it's a powerful uprising of people that are finally, hopefully, turning the tide here and getting the politicians to, some of them at least, to feel comfortable taking a stand against the fossil fuel, domination of our public policy.
Again, Peter Galvin is a director of programs and a founder of the Center for Biological Diversity. We're also joined by Scott Parkin, who is a senior climate and energy campaigner at the Rainforest Action Network. Scott, obviously, Rainforest Action Network has been at the forefront of many other organizations, with many other organizations fighting the Keystone pipeline. How do you see that organizing playing a role in Obama's pretty strong words on Tuesday?
I think what we've seen is just like millions of people have like taken action on this, and Obama repeatedly has told social movements in the past that, you know, it's the role of social movements to make him do the hard things. And so, you know, people who have, you know, did sit-ins in front of the White House in 2011, people who have protested up and down the pipeline route from Alberta to Texas, and then like the, you know, almost 100,000 people who signed the Keystone Pledge of Resistance have made a very clear statement to the president that, you know, we don't want this pipeline and we're going to stand against it. And I feel like it's part of a bigger movement against extreme energy around the country. And we're actually in this moment, like I think Michael Clare in an article just the last couple of days called it an anti-carbon moment, which is like really created this sort of toxic environment more and more for like fossil fuels in North America.
I want to get to that in a second, but I want to ask Karthik Kanapathy as well from 350.org, the U.S. communications manager, because you have also been very much busy on this front. Talk a little bit about the activism that has been done and its impact, perhaps not only on Obama, but also on local officials and local governments that in many ways have the pressure of this Congress on them as well.
Sure. You know, it's interesting. We just looked back the other day at a 2011 poll of Energy Insiders by some Beltway publication, and their consensus at the time was that the pipeline would get built by the end of 2011. It was a done deal.
Unbelievable.
So I think Peter's got it right. I think it's a testament to the incredible organizing that we've seen that it's now 2015 that the pipeline still hasn't been built, and that we're now steps away from a permanent rejection. So I mean, for our part, you know, we're definitely heartened by what the president said, but it's always been our role to sort of maintain a bit of a skeptical sort of distance, and making sure that politicians commit to following through on their promise.
Karthik, is the tar sands development still happening in Canada under Stephen Harper's administration, which has been a real booster of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, there's no doubt that Stephen Harper's administration is some of the worst on climate issues in the world. But just this week, a new study came out in Nature, and it was widely covered, basically saying that 90% of U.S. coal reserves and virtually all of Canada's tar sands have to stay in the ground for us to stay below the 2 degrees Celsius warming target that we agreed upon. And that's sort of a terrifying thing. So we can't. Keystone XL is sort of as we like to say, it's game over for the climate, because it would help accelerate the development of tar sands, not just for that pipeline, but for projects like N Energy East, which are in the works, Alberta Clipper, and that would be truly disastrous for our climate.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this, because and any one of you can answer. Again, we're speaking with Karthik Kanapathy of 350.org, Scott Parkin from the Rainforest Action Network, and Peter Galvin from the Center for Biological Diversity. Because I have concerns about how Obama is making these statements, and he's, in many ways, he's also arguing that this is the drop in oil prices and energy prices, the accelerated pace of fracking and development on the U.S. Homeland, on the U.S. front, is giving kind of justice to his energy policies of all of the above, which is not necessarily a green all of the above. And I'm concerned about, okay, he's making this position now because the energy prices have gone down so much. It's, you know, it's becoming, you know, unbelievable to see, you know, gas prices at $2.30 a gallon, and we thought that would never happen again. And how much pressure that would change once we start seeing that kind of go the other direction again, and the political pressure that he would be under, and not only him, because this might be a while that we'll see these prices, but certainly under a new administration come 2016. What is the approach that all of your organizations are taking to potentially counteracting this not necessarily green argument? Karthik, maybe you can start with 350.org.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I can say that you're right that all of the above isn't the most green policy that there is. That oil production under this president has gone up dramatically,
as is gas exploration as well.
Right, exactly, and that does no favors for our climate, especially as study after study comes out showing why we need to essentially stop essentially move off fossil fuels entirely if we want to prevent climate catastrophe. And in fact, just a month ago or 2 months ago, the UN framework on climate change, their regular study showed that we need to be 90% off fossil fuels by 2100. So I mean, for our part, we're definitely getting applying pressure on this president to sort of it's clear that in the last couple of years of his presidency, that the president's made climate issues of a priority. Between the EPA regulations, between his deal with China, his goals, I should say, announced jointly with China to cut emissions by 30% by 2030, and then his finally taking a firm stand on Keystone, and not just articulating the case against Keystone from sort of a procedural executive branch versus legislative branch perspective, but also making the jobs argument, the climate argument, showing why Keystone is just bad public policy. And then he's been doing all of that. But that said, it's definitely on groups like 350.org and the River Rainforest Action Network and the Center for Biological Diversity to follow through and make sure that this president is actually good on our issues and actually moves us forward toward the end of the fossil-free age, the fossil fuel age. And so for our part, we've been pressuring him and lawmakers across the country to push for policies that move us away from dirty fuel sources like tar sands or oil or gas and towards renewable ones. There's a powerful economic argument made there too, that sort of solves a bunch of the country's job problems as well. And so we feel like we have the upper hand of this argument. It's just whether or not folks will listen in time for us to prevent catastrophe.
Scott Parkin, our plans to keep this pressure on because of the, again, as I pointed out, the drop in energy prices makes it a little bit politically for Obama, a little bit easier for him to make this argument that there's no need now. But obviously, we're already in an election campaign, pretty much. What is Rainforest Action Network preparing to put pressure on that front?
Rainforest Action Network has a long history of shifting paradigms, and so, like with our climate campaign, we've decided that the most important thing to do at this point is keep fossil fuels on the ground. And so, with our Keystone campaign, with some of our other campaigns, which includes putting pressure on Wall Street to stop funding dirty energy projects, something from the coal industry or the tar sands industry, is that we continually want to create like a toxic environment for dirty energy industries, and a lot of what happens, particularly when it comes to the Beltway, is it's a lot about what's politically possible and what's necessary. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is talk about what's necessary to like prevent a 2% rise in global temperatures and that sort of thing. And so we're going to continue to put pressure not just on President Obama but also on the corporations which are extracting natural gas, coal, oil, tar sands, that sort of thing, and even like the banks which like fund those industries.
But it seems like a really great breakthrough having Obama say that he will stop that through this administration. What are some of the positive, that's to say alternative sources of policy and around energy, that beyond just keeping fossil fuels in the ground actually help reconfigure how the economy and works?
Well, this is, Peter, one of the things that I want to point out is that there's a couple of things. One is called the Renewable Portfolio Standard, and it's a commitment of each state to produce a certain amount of alternative renewable energy by a date certain. Most states have these goals right now that are being implemented, but they're very modest, you know, ranging from 10%, some states are 20%. California is 33%. The governor has just announced he wants 50%, which is certainly less modest. But still, this is it's a sort of a state-by-state approach that the federal government has been resisting codifying and getting real momentum moving forward on. So there's renewable portfolio standards. There's feed-in tariff issues where you have, in Europe, Germany in particular, a massive expansion of solar power by creating a per-kilowatt tariff that is paid to producers, essentially homeowners and small landowners that produce solar power and feed it into the grid at a decent rate, enough to be profitable, enough to spur that kind of small scale, you know, large scale solar, but from small scale projects. And so there's some you know, and there's a lot of groups and activists, including folks on this call, working on those policies in the U.S. But we have to have a, you know, just a, all across the board, from the policies that on public lands we've got, you know, very, very low royalties and weak environmental standards, so that, that oil and gas companies are drilling huge amounts of, you know, fracking on public lands, national forests, and Bureau of Land Management lands throughout the country, mostly out west, but also in the east, in Pennsylvania. And so we've got a huge need to shift these policies around. You know, specifically, we got to deal with fossil fuelization of our public lands. A huge amount of our wild lands are being gobbled up by the oil and gas industry. And then, you know, fracking, we've got huge methane leakage problems. And then on the energy front, we've got these proactive ways to readjust power production that can immediately make a big difference. And, you know, a few cities in the U.S. have gone with the feed-in tariff, including Gainesville, Florida, interestingly, which produces a large amount of power by solar and is slated to produce the majority of its power by solar through this, these innovative financing and feed-in tariff is a key part of that.
We were quickly running out of time, but practically speaking, just for, you know, as we move forward next week, we'll see more of this, I'm sure, in the news. Apparently 63 senators support the measure to move forward on Keystone, which is four less than they would need to override a veto. The possibility of an override, what kind of pressure needs to be put on this pretty treacherous Congress that we've already seen signs, pretty strong signs of where they're going?
Well, major pressure, and we're all you know, continuing that pressure, and it has to be intensified, because we have a situation where just a few wavering you know, politicians could change the fate of human history here with the potential development of these catastrophic tar sands, but ultimately you know, it looks like if Obama stays strong with what he has said and people keep the pressure on, that it's going to be really hard for them to get those four senators, because people are pretty locked into their positions at this point.
Okay, well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us this morning. We've been speaking with Peter Galvin, who's a director of programs, a founder of the Center for Biological Diversity, Scott Parkin from the Rainforest Action Network, one of the organizers of the Keystone XL Pledge of Resistance, and Karthik Ganapathy, U.S. Communications Manager for 350.org. We're going to be linking all of your organizations to the WBAI.org homepage, and thank you all for joining us. We'll be in touch as we continue following these developments. So thank you so much for joining us.